From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's as if Halley's Comet just flew through the world of chess, or a pitcher just threw a barn full of no-hitters. In St. Louis, the new chess capital of America, 22-year-old Fabiano Caruana just won 7 straight games against the strongest field of competitors in any chess tournament maybe ever. It's a feat almost unprecedented in the history of chess. The world of chess is pretty amazing these days. It's got Vegas, aliens, oligarchs, fjords, and an epic winning streak. This hour on Point, put down the video game console. We are looking at chess. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What happened to chess? Why did it fall off the radar? Are you still out there playing? And what do you think of Fabiano Caruana? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Seth Stevenson, contributing writer for Slate. His terrific new piece is Grandmaster Clash. One of the most amazing feats in chess history just happened, and no one noticed. You can link to it from our website, onpointradio.org. Seth Stevenson, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
What an amazing story you tell. And I want to get to Fabiano Caruana and his kind of unbelievable accomplishment just a couple of minutes ago in chess history time. But maybe you can walk us into getting a feel for this world through the introduction of a few people and the worlds around them. Before we come to this amazing new winner, introduce us, if you would, Seth, to a Russian named, and I don't know how to pronounce this correctly, but Kirsan Ilyumzhinov.
Yes, I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce it either, but we'll call him Kirsan Ilyumzhinov. He is the president of FIDE, the Fédération Internationale des Échecs, the world governing body of chess, and he has been its president for about 2 decades now. He also, at times, has been the president of the Russian Republic of Kalmykia. And Ilyumzhinov, in addition to being the president of FIDE, is a believer that extraterrestrials invented chess. He believes he was abducted by aliens wearing yellow spacesuits in 1997. Who brought him to a faraway star and told him, quote, many things. He thinks there's a special code that was put in chess by the aliens, that there are 64 squares on the chessboard and 64 codons in human DNA, and this must mean something. So he's an interesting fellow. And FIDE is known to be, or at least rumored to be, sort of comically corrupt in the same vein as FIFA, the governing body of soccer, or the IOC, the governing body of the Olympics.
And with the same power in the world of chess. I mean, this is the governing body.
Yeah, you can only be the champion of chess, the official champion of chess, if you win a sanctioned championship title match sanctioned by FIDE. They control it. And there have been efforts to break away from FIDE, to get out from under its thumb. The famous player Garry Kasparov in the 90s tried to start his own chess association, but it eventually failed. And FIDE rules with the iron fist at this point.
And the head of this organization really believes that chess was brought to Earth by extraterrestrials. This isn't a drinking game or some kind of nuanced joke.
He has spoken openly about this in the media many times. He's happy to talk about his abduction story and about his belief in the special alien powers of chess. Yeah, he's on the record. He's not shy about it.
He wants, or there will soon be, another World Chess Champ tournament in Sochi, in the abandoned, almost ruins already, I read some places, of Sochi, the Olympic grounds.
Yes. So this is the recent controversy in the chess world is that FIDE has been trying to arrange a title match. So a title, like in boxing, in order to become the champion of chess, you need to beat the champion of chess in a head-to-head, one-on-one sanctioned match. And FIDE sanctions those matches. And right now, what they're organizing is for November, for Magnus Carlsen, the current world number one, current defending champion, a Norwegian fellow, they have been arranging a match in November against an Indian grandmaster who's number 5 in the world and who won some qualifying events to become the challenger for this title match. FIDE would like to hold this match in Sochi in the abandoned, as you said, somewhat possibly scary, full of rubble and potholed, feral dog infested world of Sochi. So a lot of the rumors in the chess world were that Magnus Carlsen, the defending champ, was not happy about the arrangements of this title match. First of all, he wasn't happy with the prize purse. Second of all, he wasn't happy with going to Sochi for a fortnight and spending time there in this scary place. Third of all, he wasn't happy about some of the political stuff going on in Russia and the fact that the sponsorship of this title match was somewhat in doubt. Who was putting up the money? Was it coming from slightly sketchy sources, maybe someone on the EU blacklist due to
an oligarch who may have been behind the trouble in Ukraine?
Yes, exactly. There's an oligarch who's been sanctioned by the EU for, quote-unquote, undermining Ukrainian sovereignty. And it was there were some rumors that maybe he was providing the funding. So Magnus Carlsen, the champion, he had a lot of uncertainty about this. But as of now, he's agreed to sign on and actually do this title match in November.
To play the Indian Grandmaster, Vishwanathan Anand. Magnus Carlsen, introduce us a little more thoroughly there. You describe him as some kind of combination of fjords and Vikings, and he models on the side. This is not how we necessarily think of chess champions, and pretty potent mind up there.
Yes, yeah, so Magnus Carlsen is one of the more compelling chess champions ever. This is especially to the Western world. So this is a young Norwegian guy. He's 23 or possibly 24 now, but right around there. He's a very handsome guy. He's got a modeling contract with G-Star Raw, which is sort of a hip clothing company. Yeah. He's got thick blonde hair and blue eyes, and he's broad-shouldered. He doesn't look like the other chess grandmasters that you see out there. And he speaks excellent English, and he also happens to be one of the best chess players ever. The best in terms of rating ever, and he was the simultaneous champion of standard chess, rapid chess, which is a slightly accelerated version of chess, and blitz chess, which is a very accelerated version of chess. So he held the belt in all three of those disciplines. Really quite a formidable guy in the history of chess champions.
Yes, but he's been beaten and recently by Fabiano. We'll come to Fabiano, introduce one more person to us, because this brings it home to the United States in a really interesting way and a really interesting story. I can't believe how many are piled up here in the chess world. Rex Sinkfield, please.
So Rex Sinkfield was an orphan in St. Louis, born with a cleft palate, lost his father, and was put in an orphanage at age 7, went on to get an MBA from the University of Chicago and to, many say, invent the passively managed, market-weighted S&P 500 index fund, made a boatload of money, has now retired back to St. Louis, where he's a member of many cultural institutions, also supports many very conservative causes, and in his spare time, he's trying to rescue chess in America. So he's created the St. Louis Chess Club, which is a wonderful chess club in a beautiful neighborhood in St. Louis with 6,000 square feet of playing rooms and lounges and libraries. Across the street, he's resurrected the World Chess Hall of Fame. He's bought up all sorts of memorabilia and put it there in a very nice venue with a gigantic chess piece out front and Bobby Fischer tchotchkes for sale in the gift shop. And he hosts the Sinkfield Cup, which is the premier North American chess tournament that just happened a few weeks ago in St. Louis and attracted the possibly strongest ever field of competitors in a chess tournament.
St. Louis emerging as the country's, maybe one of the world's key chess players. Webster University there has the nation's best college chess team, you report. And here comes the Sinkfield Cup. Give us some sense of what happened there and just how remarkable it is in chess terms.
So the Sinkfield Cup had 6 competitors, all of them in the top 10 grandmasters in the world, including Magnus Carlsen, the number one we discussed. And what happened is a guy who is the number 3 coming into the tournament, his name is Fabiano Caruana. He was born in Miami. He moved to Brooklyn as a child. He learned to play chess in a synagogue in Park Slope, Brooklyn. Okay. At 12, he moved to Europe to further his chess career to be closer to the top level teachers in tournaments. And as we entered the tournament, he was number 3 in the world. He's about 22 years old. Mm-hmm. And he started out the tournament by winning his first 7 games in a row, which may just sound sort of mildly impressive to you and me, but in the chess world is just a miraculous feat to win 7 in a row against top level competition like this, because there are so many draws or ties in chess, particularly among top level guys. It's not, you can reasonably expect to engineer a draw if you really want to stop another player. And Fabiano Caruana wasn't getting tied. He wasn't losing, and he was winning in spectacular fashion. He was spanking his opponent. In the words of one of the commentators I spoke to there. People were comparing this 7-0 start to some of the greatest feats in chess history, to the 1994 tournament in Linares where Anatoly Karpov won his first 6 matches, to a 1968 tournament where Viktor Korchnoi had a magical run, to Bobby Fischer, one of the legendary grandmasters in the history of chess who won 20 straight games against grandmasters. They're comparing this in the world of chess to some of the greatest feats ever. And outside of the world of chess, they're reaching for things like throwing 100 straight no-hit innings in baseball. And I think there's maybe a bit of hyperbole there, but it is like that idea. It's an unprecedented thing that Fabiana Caruana did.
People you report were just sort of falling down on their faces at what was unfolding here. But almost sadly, at a time when the country pays almost no attention. Here's Halley's Comet going by, and it's as if no one were looking.
Yeah, and so I want to, you know, emphasize there are certainly, there's a hearty band of chess fans who knew exactly what was going on.
Yep.
I was the only mainstream non-chess journalist covering this tournament. Even after Caruana had started the first half of the tournament 5-0, I got there on the rest day after that first half. He was 5-0. People were talking about how amazing that already was. And there were no other mainstream journalists coming to cover the tournament. There wasn't a lot of coverage in the press. I saw a few items here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it really was not a huge deal, and I think still probably a lot of your listeners have never heard of Fabiana Caruana until just now.
Seth Stevenson, please stand by in New York City, author of a terrific piece in Slate called Grandmaster Clash, one of the most amazing feats in chess history just happened, and no one noticed. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Behind me right here from the 1984 musical Chess that dramatized the Cold War era chess rivalry, an American character based loosely on Bobby Fischer. Here's a song, The Soviet Machine, Soviet players boasting of their supremacy. This is On Point.
Hi! I prefer, and I'm sure you concur, to see who's ahead psychologically. For example, we have on tap an inscrutable chap whose thoughts never stray from the state of the play. Bit by bit, the pieces fit, the Soviet machine advances. That one move that won't improve our nation's chances. Hey! We can hit the stunning victory on the board and off it. This will show the traitor no one rats with profit.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the wild, wonderful, these days much ignored world of chess. Kings and queens, knights and pawns, a miraculous tournament performance in St. Louis, a big pot coming up in Las Vegas. We got aliens, Norwegians. Seth Stevenson writes it all up in a big piece for Slate called Grandmaster Clash. You can link to it at our website. Here's a little archive footage and interviews from the 2011 documentary Bobby Fischer Against the World. Shows America's fascination with Fischer's championship match against the defending Soviet champion in 1972.
ABC Sports presents the World Chess Championship match between Boris Spassky, the defending champion from the Soviet Union, and 29-year-old Bobby Fischer, the challenger from the United States.
It was the Super Bowl. The audiences were gigantic. People stayed home from work.
People were lining up in front of TV sets and department stores. They were chess groupies.
On Times Square, they were showing the game live. It was that important.
Live in Times Square, that was the time. Here, much more recently, just a few weeks ago, in a recap of round four of the Sinkfield Cup in St. Louis, commentator and grandmaster himself, Maurice Ashley, tried to convey Fabiano Caruana's dominance in the cup so far.
Well, it's all been fabulous, Fabiano. Number two player in the world, Caruana, blitzing the field with a perfect 4-0 start. And today he crushed Levon Aronian in amazing style. Here, playing the move, rook to h5. And if Levon had captured, then simply this beautiful sacrifice, capturing all his pieces and trapping a knight, forcing Levon to resign.
But that was not exactly ABC's wide world of sports. Stephen Stevenson with Slate is with us from New York. Steph, remind us of the role and the place that chess had in the height of the Cold War, Bobby Fischer time.
Sure. Bobby Fischer, first of all, since 1948, there had been nothing but Soviet champions in the chess world. And here came Bobby Fischer, American-born, in 1972, beats Boris Spassky in Iceland to become the first and still only American world champion of chess. It was a huge deal. And Fischer was on the cover of multiple national magazines.
Yeah.
And it sparked this boom that is still called in the chess world the Fischer boom, where, you know, kids were learning how to play chess and buying Bobby Fischer's books. And It was a real thing. It was sort of in the forefront of the cultural imagination. Chess was a big deal. And, you know, there are still many chess fans, many people who play chess, but it certainly is not at the forefront of our culture in the way that it was then. And that may be a function of the Cold War. It may be something where simply the battle of West versus of Soviets versus the U.S. Is what caused so much interest in that match. But for whatever reason, chess doesn't have quite the same place that it used to have in our culture.
Is it about video games? Is it because there are so many other things to play now? And some video games, okay, Grand Theft Auto, slam bam, many people love it, but there are some pretty thoughtful ones too. Have video games taken the wind out of the sails?
Sure, there are competing mind sports, as we call these kinds of sports. And video games, you know, you can do a lot of pretty fun stuff in video games. You can drive fast cars, you can shoot stuff. It's pretty fun, and you can see why kids might want to do that instead of playing around with a bunch of wooden pieces on a board. That's one problem, I think. Although, you know, we can point to a mind sport like poker. Poker has had a lot of success on television. It's on a lot of cable channels, and it's got decent viewership. And it's another thing where, you know, the visuals are not electric. Just like chess, you've got people sitting around a table with the hands on their sides of their heads. It's not the most amazing tableau, but people watch poker in a way that they don't watch chess. And I would argue part of the problem for chess is that it's hard. Chess is difficult. If you want to be decent at it, if you want to think along with these grandmasters and really know what's going on, you need to really study it and not just know how the pieces move, like, you know, a 10-year-old might learn to play chess. You need to study openings and defenses and understand why it's important to develop a bishop here or protect a pawn there. And that takes a lot of work and time and concentration that maybe people can't invest in the game.
We're going to look at this epic performance that just unfolded to the amazement of chess fans in St. Louis. The man behind making St. Louis the chess capital of America, one of the great chess capitals of the world now, is Rex Sinkfield. Here's a little bit of him. This was back in 2009 at the grand opening of the Chess Club and Scholastic Center in St. Louis, one of the premier chess venues now in the country. Chess lover and philanthropist Rex Sinkfield said the vision for the center is to get more kids involved in chess.
There is a lot of scholastic chess going on in St. Louis already. It just doesn't get the kind of coverage that it should. If there were more coverage, that would help more kids and it would create more awareness. So that's one part of it. The other is to take what is probably the most sophisticated and certainly the most brutal competitive activity and put St. Louis on the map.
I just love that. Seth Stevenson, there's Rex Sinkfield, whose money is behind a lot of this. Born an orphan, cleft palate, all the rest up against it, but made gazillions and now putting a bunch of it into chess. And he sees chess as certainly the most brutal and competitive activity. This is a man who's really into it, to see it that way, Seth.
He sure is. And, you know, it's amazing. He spent all this money to bring this top-level tournament to St. Louis. It's just a sort of unexpected thing. When I was at the tournament, I was watching one of the games in sort of a quiet viewing lounge within the chess club. And I looked over to my left, and there was Rex Sinkfield just sitting all by himself watching the chess for an hour on end. And I can tell that he, spending all this money bringing these top-level grandmasters to shine the World Chess Hall of Fame, it's just out of a pure, simple love for the game that he has.
He's made a chess capital in St. Louis. West is calling from Austin, Texas. West, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just returned from Elista Kalmykia, Russia, where chess is definitely alive. Are you all familiar with Elista?
I don't know it. Maybe Seth does. Tell us about it.
Yes, Elista was a small town in southern Russia, where this rich guy showed up back, you know, about 20 years ago and wanted to make it the chess capital, which, of course, meant inviting Chuck Norris and Muammar Gaddafi over. He was enthralled by the book The 12 Chairs, which involved a con man that tried to con this town into becoming the chess capital of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, it actually happened. Well, I don't know about the chess capital of the world, but the World Chess Tournament was held there about 20 or 30 years ago. And it's this little bitty town out in the middle of the desert, and everybody there, including the little kids, are great chess players. We soundly got beaten any time we tried to play anybody. Not that I'm a very good chess player, but it was very impressive. They're totally enthralled with chess there.
Seth, it sounds like you may have some idea about Elista Kalmykia.
Well, Kalmyki is home to Kyrsan Ilyumzhinov, the president of FIDE. And yes, he's very big on making Kalmyki a chess destination. In fact, he convinced Kalmyki to spend $50 million to build this sort of suburban development called Chess City. And I don't know how successful that development was. But he has definitely held the reins of FIDE within Kalmyki for quite some time.
Even with his extraterrestrial origins of chess view, Vladimir Putin comes into this story, at least reportedly, that he's not happy that chess has floated away to Norway. He wants to get the power back in Russia. What did you hear about that, Seth?
So, you know, these are rumors within the sort of the fever swamps of mm-hmm. the collective imagination of the chess world. But there are these rumors that Vladimir Putin and Kyrsan Ilyumzhinov are pals and that they would prefer a return to the days of Soviet-era chess glory. They would like a proper Russian world champion. And that part of the controversy over getting Magnus Carlsen, this Norwegian, impudent Norwegian kid who's now the champion, to sign on to this upcoming title bout, was they were hoping they could sort of drive him away with a small prize purse or an unattractive venue. And if they did that, the rumor was that they were going to slide in this top-level Russian player who's going to compete against the Indian Grandmaster, and that maybe they could, you know, have a restoration of Russian chess glory. I mean, these are all, of course, total rumors.
Right. Though the report was there that Magnus maybe didn't want to play in that Sochi ghost town, was afraid that it might put him off his game. It's a psychological game. I mean, put somebody in a weird enough situation, they could set them up to lose.
Psychology plays a huge role in chess, absolutely. And in fact, Viswanathan Anand, his competitor in the championship, didn't go to the Sinkfield Cup in St. Louis because he wanted to take all that time to study Magnus Carlsen for their upcoming match. He's just been sitting at home in India studying Carlsen's games, preparing openings this whole time, even while Carlsen was at the Sinkfield Cup in St. Louis. It's a very psychological game, and confidence plays a huge role. If you are feeling very confident at the chess table, moving quickly and decisively, that gets into your opponent's head. Your opponent starts to wonder whether you might have a foolproof plan, whether you might know everything he's got up his sleeve and you're ready for it. And he might actually even alter his course a little bit with the thought that he needs to do something different or something special because he's walking into a trap.
Here's a little bit of the current reigning world champ of chess, Magnus Carlsen, the Norwegian. This is 2012 CBS interview, 60 Minutes. Said he, Carlsen, loves to see his opponents squirm.
I enjoy it when I see my opponent, you know, really suffering when he knows that I've outsmarted him. If I lose just one game, then usually, you know, I just want to really get revenge.
This is war, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Revenge, suffering. These are people really into it. Rihanna, no less, calling from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Rihanna, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that when I was growing up, not playing chess was not an option. It was a big deal in our household. It was almost as important as going to college. I mean, you were embarrassed to say you didn't know how to play chess. So I'm really shocked at how many people don't know how to play chess.
It is really fascinating. It was the same in my house. I mean, you didn't have to become a grandmaster, but you had to know it and be ready to play it. What about now, Rihanna, in your house today? Is it played in the same way?
Absolutely. We all still play together. Me and my siblings, we're adults now. We get together on an app called Chess for Friends, and we play from our iPhones. So we still very much enjoy chess.
Over the distances, Chess for Friends. That's terrific, Rihanna. I appreciate your call. One more right here on the back of that, maybe. Mike in Sunrise, Florida. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm the mayor of Sunrise, Florida, and in cooperation with our local school board, the America's Foundation for Chess, we're rolling out probably the nation's largest introduction of scholastic chess in the classroom. This coming year, we'll have over 30,000 second and third graders in our public schools learning chess in the classroom once a week. And what we've seen from the pilot program last year is overwhelming enthusiasm by parents and teachers, educators, to incorporate the lessons of chess in the classroom. And the multiplier impact in our community has been outstanding. We're launching next month with the National Scholastic Chess Foundation a training program to train parent volunteers and mentors to work with after-school clubs. And the mayors throughout our county have been getting together regularly for a chess challenge to play each other.
I love it. Mr. Mayor, what's the payoff that you all see in this? You're putting a lot of effort into it. I love it. What's the payoff?
We're seeing it in the classroom. It began when I was a PTA president, and I worked with one of our teachers to bring the after-school club. And what I saw immediately were students who perhaps weren't enthusiastic about school or the level of expectation was a little lower based on their academic performance simply flourish under chess education and the lessons. We're seeing culturally bringing the community together of all ages. And one of the things I think that chess teaches, particularly for students, is the simple lesson of you have to think before you move, think before you act. And simply regretting a move isn't good enough. So we're seeing it in the classroom, and we believe we'll see it long-term through lower dropout rates, lower criminal justice interventions, and overall smarter engineers, doctors, scientists, leaders, housewives.
I love it. I love it. Think before you move, before you act. Mayor Mike in Sunrise, Florida, thank you very much for calling in with that.
You bet, Tom. Thanks for covering this. Great. It's a great story.
Oh, we love it. Chess commentary can be a little tough to follow for the uninitiated. Here are Jennifer Shahadi, she'll join us in just a moment, and Alejandro Ramirez commenting on a team match at the recent Sinkfield Cup.
Got an endgame already, in fact. So bishop takes f3 was played, and queen takes f3, queen takes f3, pawn takes f3. White didn't want to double the pawns in the middle game, so instead transposing into this endgame where white has the two bishops, but a worse pawn structure. Who do you prefer here?
I'm a bishop's guy.
Rihanna in Oklahoma City is following that. Some of us, not so easily. Jennifer Shahadi joins us right now from Philadelphia, chess expert, author. She holds the title of Woman Grandmaster, two-time American women's chess champion. She was a commentator at the Sinkfield Cup in St. Louis, author of Play Like a Girl, Tactics on Nine Queens. She's co-founder of Nine Queens. It's a nonprofit that provides chess instruction. Jennifer Shahadi, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Would you please talk to us? We're finally really going to come around to Fabiano, this Italian great, born in Miami, raised up in Brooklyn, playing in the synagogue in Park Slope. What's his style of play that led to this incredible 7 wins in a row at the tournament, Jennifer?
Well, he won in all sorts of different ways. That's a thing, to win 7 games in a row against those players. Some of them were crushing attacks where he'd actually prepared the moves in advance. So he had actually seen the openings that they were going to play and had predicted improvements upon their moves. And some of them were like longer grinds where he just kind of improved his position little by little and won. He won in basically every different way that you could win a chess game in those 7 games.
He's 22 years old. Do you see him as a threat to everybody else, including Magnus, the reigning champ?
Yeah, everybody, after the Sinkfield Cup, everybody would just fantasize about someday seeing a world championship match between those two, because both are such great ambassadors for the game, like so humble and interesting outside of chess. Like if you ran into them and had a conversation, you wouldn't know that they were the best chess player in the world. And then also their styles are different. Fabiano seems like he's a little bit more into crushing his opponent out of the gate. Just finding some amazing bombshell in the first 20 moves of the game. And Magnus Carlsen is really well known for the long grinds, just playing good move after good move and winning like 80-100 move games.
Do you expect that they will meet in a, whatever you call it, a grand championship title match? Is that inevitable in the world of chess these days, or are the politics such that it might not happen? Like boxing, sometimes logical things don't happen.
Well, considering that they're 22 and 23 years old, respectively, I'm optimistic that one day we will see that showdown. And honestly, if we don't, it'll probably be because some young player, comes up and starts to battle with them. So I think that we're going to see some excitement in the next few years in chess, whether those two play or not. But I'd love to see that match.
Jennifer Shahadi, Grandmaster, please stand by there in Philadelphia. Seth Stevenson with Slate in New York City, with a terrific piece. Read it at our website, Grandmaster Clash. You will enjoy it. If you like chess or even imagine liking the world of chess, give it a read. Rapper GZA, one of the founding members of the Wu-Tang Clan, devoted chess player, his 2005 album Grandmasters, released with DJ Muggs, uses chess as an extended metaphor for hip-hop and life. Here's General Principles from that album. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. GZA. Got a little air than half suspense. MC's stuck with being fascination. The nature and the scale of events shake the station. I stick up the track armed only with the pen. Terrorize you vocally with the force to win. From graffiti in New York, on the walls of trains, DJs in California, to the shores of Maine. Beat boys on the floor, we'll be doing the thing. To MC's behind ropes, who had titles to claim. This is hip-hop. That's what we should do. Black people. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this about the wild, wonderful, these days much-ignored world of chess, kings and queens, knights and pawns, a miraculous tournament in St. Louis, a big pot in Vegas coming up. We'll talk about that. Aliens, extraterrestrials, Norwegians, with Seth Stevenson. He writes it all up in a terrific piece in Slate, Grandmaster Clash. Jennifer Shahadi is with us. She's author of Play Like a Girl, Tactics on Nine Queens, Woman Grandmaster, two-time American Women's Chess Champion. She was a commentator at the Sinkfield Cup in St. Louis this year. Rex Sinkfield, born an orphan in St. Louis, has made St. Louis now a chess capital of the world. Also very active in politics there. Kansas City Star here, recent piece talking about him in the thick of taxes and education policies. Very, very conservative political player, very intense chess player and aficionado with a lot of money to put behind it there. And, of course, the big winner at the recent Sinkfield Cup tournament, Italian, but born in Miami, raised up in Brooklyn, played at the synagogue in Park Slope, Fabiano Caruana. Here he is at the Sinkfield Cup describing his process of preparation for a chess game against a tough opponent.
In the morning, I look at their games. I prepare for them. I try to decide what I'm going to do, something to surprise them. And we analyze with chess engines. We look over position. Usually we try to go deep. We use opening books, databases, and basically every tool. I try to use every tool at my disposal to get the upper hand at the start of the game.
Fabiano the Magnificent, seven straight wins, seven games in a row at the Sinkfield Cup there. Almost unheard of in the world of chess. Seth, you interviewed him. That's your interview we just played from right there. What's your sense from watching, talking with people? Jennifer gave us some of her read on this player, of his style, his approach.
So my understanding of Fabiano's approach is that he is the best prepared player in the chess world. He's constantly studying games that come out. He talked to me about how games are put up on the internet every day and you can study them and look at them and look at the positions and use a chess engine to help you analyze those positions. And there are constantly new ideas coming out in the chess world and new trends. You've got to stay on top of all of them. Always be looking for something that might surprise your opponent that they haven't seen before. Constantly looking at your opponent's past games to look for vulnerabilities or tendencies. He is going to outwork everybody, is my understanding. He just, you know, I talked to him about, did he have any interests outside of chess? And he mentioned he likes to read David Sedaris and he likes to watch movies, yeah, particularly action movies. But he really spends all his time staring at chess games. And he wants to come out and just brutalize you in those opening moves because he's come up with something you haven't seen or you're not ready for or you don't like. And that's in contrast to Magnus Carlsen, who seems a little more content. One of the commentators said it was like Magnus Carlsen will kind of serve an underhand serve to get into the point and start the rally, whereas Fabiano Caruana has the booming first serve that puts you on your heels immediately.
Here he was again. He was asked by Seth Stevenson with us here today about that astounding performance at the Sinkfield Cup in St. Louis. Fabiano Caruana didn't exactly have a specific explanation for his surge.
I started to play better than I normally do. And I'm not sure why it happened. I don't think I'm doing anything differently. Just playing with a bit more confidence and a bit more sure of myself. But besides that, I really don't know what changed.
Jennifer Shahadi, you're American Women's Chess Champion. Put in words for us, to you, how remarkable it is to get these seven wins in a row.
Well, I've never seen anything like it. And there was a sense at the Sinkfield Cup, everybody watching online, we had hundreds of thousands of viewers online, and then people in the club and playing in the tournament, that we were witnessing something that people are going to be talking about for decades. So that was a really cool feeling. I've never had that before, where I was at an event where I really felt that this was something people will talk about forever. It will be in historical, etched in chess history, because it's just so unlikely to win that many games in a row. And it could be the start of a new world champion as well.
I don't know if you still have this in mind, as people might, a key moment in a basketball or baseball game. But if you can, Jennifer, take us back to one of these games and a situation in which people's jaws dropped at Fabiano's play. If you can recreate it for us in layperson's terms, is that possible? I'd love to hear.
Yeah. Well, against Magnus Carlsen, one of the most incredible face-offs, when he was playing Magnus Carlsen with the black pieces. So when you play black in chess, you're kind of put into a defensive posture, especially when you're playing against the world champion and the number one player in the world. There's this idea that if you get an even okay position, that's good. But Fabiano really turned it around, and Magnus was going at him. He sacrificed a bishop, and all the commentators and spectators were kind of concerned for Fabiano. Was he just going to get crushed? And he just had everything planned out, and he actually turned it around and won the game and put the attack back on Magnus with his hyper-accurate, the kind of moves that, you know, you wouldn't expect a human to play so quickly, because he just was, you know, all of his practice and not being at all intimidated by the world champion attacking you so aggressively. I think that was a real moment where it was like a game changer, like, hey, this guy could really be a world champion and can really take it to Magnus Carlsen, who before the Sinkfield Cup, Magnus was miles ahead of his number two player in the world. And now they're almost neck and neck, Fabiano and Magnus. So this was a really big moment for chess.
We hear the excitement right there as you convey it. But here, just respond to one of our listeners on Twitter. Joni says, I'd rather watch men in kilts toss telephone poles than men in chairs move pawns. What about the spectator angle of this, Jennifer?
Well, I think that until you start playing chess, you might not really get the excitement of it and how beautiful it is. So I would encourage you to do what Rihanna does and play a little chess on your phone. You know, once you play, you really get it. And we have more kids playing than ever before. And that's why I actually think chess right now is more popular than I've ever seen. Okay, I wasn't around when Fischer won the world championship, so that is, of course, one historical reference point where chess was its absolute peak of popularity in America. But we've never had so many women playing. There's more women playing in the United States Chess Federation now than ever. There are more kids. We had over 5,000 people playing in the National Kids Chess Tournament last year. I also play a lot of poker, actually, and every single time I go to a poker tournament, multiple people at the table ask me about chess. They recognize me from chess, and they ask me questions about their games on their phone. I've just never seen anything like it, and I really think that the St. Louis Chess Club, being the chess capital of America and having this gorgeous chess club, there's nothing like it in the world, is kind of inspiring people to you know, take the game more seriously, and I'm really excited about what's to come.
Seth Stevenson, I mean, in the media at least, we're on it today, but there was scarcely a peep about this amazing performance in St. Louis. It may be that at the grassroots level that people are playing it out there, maybe more than ever. I don't have the numbers on that, but what about at the popular media attention level? Why do you think it's diminished, Seth?
Well, you know, as Jennifer said, it's a bit of a tough game to understand if you haven't played it or haven't played it at a somewhat higher level.
But that's always been the case, and it was more popular before at the media level.
We had that Cold War stuff injecting a little spice into the competition. I think that helped in the Bobby Fischer era. You know, now we also, with computer chess engines, there may be this sense, you know, if you wanted to watch the highest level chess competition in the world, you'd be watching two CPUs play against each other. And maybe that takes a little bit of shine off the game. I'm not sure. But, you know, I think there are some ideas about how to liven up chess. Some people have suggested instead of having this boxing style world championship title defense, we should have four majors in the way that an individual sport like tennis or golf does. And we'd have four majors around the world, and in between, we'd know who's number one by the rankings accumulated in those majors. And maybe that would help make it a little bit more sensible, help rationalize the chess world a little bit. There's also Maurice Ashley, who is at the Sinkfield Cup as a commentator with Jennifer, has a new tournament coming up in Las Vegas, which is an open. It's called the Millionaire Chess Open, and anyone who wants to pony up $1,000 can sit down at a chess table with people from all over the country, maybe around the world, of all sorts of different levels. And if you win the top prize, you'll get that $1 million. It's sort of more modeled on the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas, where any schlub can come in and see what they can do up against top competition. So maybe that'll be another way to bring some excitement into the chess world.
So move over to Texas Hold'em Poker. Here's a little bit of an ad for that upcoming Millionaire Chess Tournament in Las Vegas, spoofing the movie The Matrix, offering the choice between red and blue pawns instead of pills.
You take the blue pawn and return to the comfortable world of chess tournaments as you know them. You take the red pawn, and I'll show you a chess event beyond your wildest imagination.
I love it. And chess gets the big beat. Jennifer Schotte, what do you think? Can this take off? You play poker, you play chess. Can chess make it in this media realm?
I totally think this is exactly the right time to have a million-dollar chess tournament in Las Vegas, because I think chess is more popular than ever, more kids playing than ever before. more glamour attached to the world, with Magnus Carlsen being a model and the St. Louis Chess Club being such a gorgeous place to play. So, yeah, this is a time for the Millionaire Chess Open, and I definitely think that it can become more popular. I'm actually also doing a tournament where you combine chess and poker. That's a Poker Stars tournament in the Isle of Man in the U.K., so it combines
combining chess and poker. You're rocking my world here. How do you even do that?
Well, basically, you play chess to determine how many poker chips you get in the tournament.
Oh, so it's like an Ironman. You have to swim and bicycle and run.
Exactly, but because it ends in poker, it's always possible for anyone to win, right?
Yeah.
That's what one of the issues with chess is, that it's very difficult for a weaker player to win against a stronger player.
Mm-hmm.
So that is solved a little bit by combining the two endeavors. And then the thing I really like about the Millionaire Chess Open in Las Vegas is that there are also reserve sections. So you can win tens of thousands of dollars even if you're not a grandmaster. So that's really exciting.
We've got explanations here. I don't know. I mean, you know, credit to the Russians. I mean, we've had our fun here a little bit today, but they have such a deep history of chess and have kept chess very much alive there. But your Paul on Facebook says it's hard to take high-level chess seriously when arguably the greatest player in history lost his bid for the presidency of Chess International Governing Body to a guy who believes in space aliens. I guess he's talking about Garry Kasparov versus the sitting chief there. Yeah, politics. But here's Tequila, who brings in another angle, Seth. She says, Tequila Mockingbird, I guess we got a handle here, very funny. The problem with chess and strategy in general is that it's more about how great your memory and pattern recognition are, as well as how fast your analytical processing ability is. That's why, Tequila writes, supercomputers can and will beat 99.9% of all humans in chess. The only times grandmasters in chess can beat the supercomputers is when they play a game the supercomputer has never analyzed. Has that knocked it down a little bit somehow, Seth, that computers basically, are better now?
Computers certainly are better. And even there was a recent demonstration where Hikaru Nakamura, the top American player, number 7 in the world, he played against a very high-level chess engine, and Nakamura was allowed to consult with a slightly less powerful chess engine against this most powerful chess engine, and he still couldn't win.
Wow.
The computers just have a brute calculating ability that humans can't match up with. That being said, we still like to watch Usain Bolt sprint, even though, the top-level competition in that world might be watching two fighter jets race against each other, right? We still like to watch humans try to reach the outer limits of human capability and battle their own nerves and fatigue and a human competitor. There's still a lot of drama in that. So even though computers have sort of taken over, and the other thing is, while computers may make human chess look worse in comparison, the fact is human chess objectively has gotten much better with the aid of computers, because now the top players are looking at these chess engines to analyze their moves. They're seeing what works best. They're learning a lot about the game that they couldn't figure out before these powerful chess engines. They're using the chess engines to improve their own games, and I think they're probably a lot stronger maybe than in days past, where these sort of outlandish moves might surprise a player and throw him off his game. Nowadays, these icy cold calculating players like Carlsen and Caruana aren't going to get fooled by that kind of thing, because they've looked at the computer simulations too much.
When the pace car is a supercomputer, it may rev up everybody a little bit. John in Omaha, Nebraska. John, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've been very interested to hear a lot of discussion about the way technology has affected chess, the internet, and these supercomputers, chess engines. The internet, to me, is a blessing and a curse, because people are playing chess for friends, as a couple people have mentioned. But that means chess is hidden. And so one of the great things that the St. Louis Club is doing is they're making chess very visible.
Yes, get the pieces back out. Get the board back out.
Exactly. And Jen Chahadi, she's a great host on there with Yasser Sarawan. And I think the future of chess in terms of media is going to be on the internet, not on television.
John, I see here that you are the vice president of the Nebraska State Chess Association. So what do you see in Nebraska? How's the popularity?
It's growing, actually. The national elementary school champion was from Lincoln, which is about 45 minutes from here, and he played in all of our tournaments this year. So chess is growing here. There's lots of kids playing in schools, and we're trying to build, just like everybody else in the country.
I love it. Keep it rolling, John. Thanks for calling from Omaha. One more here. Tony in Elgin in Quebec, Canada. Tony, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I was just happened to be in New York City last weekend and I found myself wandering through Central Park.
Yeah.
And looked and came across a huge chess tournament, hundreds and hundreds of people of all ages, young children and octogenarians, all playing chess. I don't know what the occasion was, but chess certainly seems to be alive in New York City.
That's fantastic.
That's all I can suggest there.
I love the picture you paint for us, Tony, and thank you very much for your call. Jennifer, what do you see coming? So you're stacking up poker and chess. Not everybody's going to have a taste for that. What's the forward evolution here in the world of chess, Jennifer?
Well, I think it's going to keep getting better. You know, St. Louis has really offered something in the center of the country with these major institutions where they have lots of tournaments all over the year, not just the Singfield Cup, but so many other elite competitions. People move to the United States or move to St. Louis just so that they can be near it. So that's a real great crux in the middle of the country. And then, as your caller just pointed out, chess is booming also in New York City, and then Las Vegas it's coming to. So I really think that Fabiano Caruana, being an American, he's going to be really inspiring also to the next generation of American players. So I see it booming. I really see maybe we're going to have an American World Championship challenger in future years. And we've got some of the best kids in the country as well. Awander Leong, there is a girl actually who beat Judith Polgar's record. Her name is Carissa Yip. And she defeated a grandmaster at 10 years old. So I see lots of good things happening for chess. And I think in a few years, we're going to see the Singfield Cup getting major coverage in mainstream media.
Hey, Seth, I'm looking here at the New York Times. They're calling Fabiano the Italian Grandmaster. Born in Miami, raised in Brooklyn. Is he the American Grandmaster, the Italian Grandmaster? What, Seth?
Well, you know, he's been playing for under the Italian flag in international chess competitions. But I've heard that American chess officials are trying to lure Fabiano back to the U.S. and compete under the U.S. banner in future international competitions. And when I asked Fabiano about that at the Singfield Cup, he was very cagey about it. He said it was private. He said there's some discussions, but I can't talk about them. So we may see him return to the fold of American chess. And it is possible that if we had another American-born champion like Bobby Fischer, it might really reignite interest in chess in the U.S.
Seth, he's a grandmaster. Don't expect him to show his next move too easily to you here. Please.
Excellent point.
Wow. Well, whichever it is, I love that we've got a grandmaster named Fabiano, maybe one day the world master. Jennifer Shahadi, thank you so much for joining us today. Just great to have you.
Thanks for covering chess.
You bet. And Seth Stevenson, great piece. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
This is On Point.